T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Welcome everyone to this episode of the Palmetto Guardian. I'm Sergeant Chelsea Weaver. It's been a while, but we're back at it. We finally got our studio back up and running, and hopefully in the next couple weeks we'll have our video podcast set back up. But I have a special guest with us today. We have something very important, I would say, to talk about, something new that a lot of people maybe have not heard of. So I'm going to let you go ahead and just introduce yourself, and then we'll jump right in.
Okay. I am Dr. Jennifer Settlemeyer. I am the Integrated Primary Prevention Manager, basically running the program of the Integrated Primary Prevention Workforce.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad that you were able to come and talk with us. I know that there's been a lot of changes at the Bluff Road Armory with people being hired, new positions, new departments, stuff like that. So can you kind of talk about what exactly the Integrated Primary Prevention Program is?
Okay. So let's start with some history.
Okay.
Most people can remember the incidents that happened at Fort Hood. When a lot of that started happening, the Independent Review Commission went in and investigated. They conducted interviews, research, and started looking at what caused that situation. And what they came up with is we do a lot about reacting. We have our SHARP programs, we have our EO programs, we have suicide prevention. Everybody gets that training every year, and we're always responding. What the IRC said was, we need to look at preventing. We need to look at prevention. What are we doing to create an environment and really a place where people can ask for help, where they feel secure, they feel there's some trust, they understand, you know, where they are and what they're doing and helping, the helping bystander aspect of it. And with that, that's how the IPPW came about. With the IRC, with their recommendation was to create a workforce that looks at prevention. And so that came down through the Department of Defense, and it literally is throughout all of our military, everything from Army, Air Force, Marines, and the Navy, and then down even through the National Guard Bureau. And so our program started with the hiring of specialists. We have tactical preventionists, we have a senior analyst, and then myself, and we also have a JAG who provides legal advice. So this program came down to really look at how do we prevent those harmful behaviors, you know, suicide, harassment, retaliation, sexual assault, domestic abuse, and child abuse. So those are some of the areas that the team looks at and tries to get to the root cause. So this program is something that is purely not necessarily militarily minded, but experts. So people who are clinical, people who have training, education, experience. And our goal is to prevent multiple harmful behaviors. So when we say harmful behaviors, what it comes at is these degrade the unit cohesion, and it ultimately affects mission readiness. So we're kind of in that readiness. We should always talk about resiliency and readiness and all of those kinds of R words, but this is something that when you have people who know how to cope, who know how to deal with things, and you have leadership that is engaged and understanding and creating this climate, this culture and the climate of the unit where people feel like they belong and they know they can ask someone to their right or their left for help.
Okay. So is this something that all services, all branches of service, I guess, are incorporating?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So the interesting thing is instead of just taking directive from NGB, we use a lot of the DOD resources. So for instance, all of our personnel are credentialed. We go through a 60-hour training. We are required to have continuous education throughout the year. And the certification levels vary on your position. And DOD is the one that's certifying us. So it is military-wide?
So, I mean, obviously, like you were saying earlier, with all these different things that has happened across the military at different bases and stuff like that, why is there such an emphasis on preventing violence in the military?
Well, we like to use, actually, a lot of our training is based on public health. Violence in and of itself is a public health issue, not only for the military, but our society. And the interesting thing about the National Guard is our personnel are active members in their society. Unlike a military base where everyone is co-located and we're all with each other 24/7, our people come together periodically throughout the year and each month, but then they go home. And so what's happening at home is where we say the public health issue is in society. Our people are very much part of all of the culture and society of the state of South Carolina. So one of the things that the military is trying to do is to prevent the violence aspect. And when people think about violence, sometimes they think, oh, you're in the military, you go to war. Mm-hmm. Well, think about, you know, our infantrymen, special forces, people who are constantly thinking about the enemy. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's always, I think there's even a movie, The Enemy Within. But the thing is, the violence aspect is something that we try to thwart. It's one thing when you go to war, but when you are in an environment and there are violent acts happening because of society, because of the climate you've set, that degrades, that's when I mentioned, that it degrades our ability to do what we need to do. If you're worrying about domestic violence or those sexual assaults going on, that is not just in the military. Some of these are occurring in their back home, college students, family members. So this is where we come in to look at how do we prevent that? How can we get at the violence? And basically trying to prevent that to get a better health, overall health. And, you know, we have the program H2F, which talks about spiritual, physical, mental, and all of the things, trying to create that whole person. And that is something when we discuss the public health aspect and using that education arena is if someone has these tendencies or if this is stuff that's going on, it's an individual. But when that individual interacts with a community, like the organization, that's the piece we can affect. We can affect where they are, what they're doing here, and how they can seek help.
So before we go a little bit further, can you kind of elaborate on the difference between prevention and the integrated primary prevention? I guess, is there like a difference to it?
Okay, so prevention is kind of all-encompassing. And the reason why we're called integrated primary prevention is think about it from, you may have seen the infographic of the stream and people are down here at the bottom of the stream and they've fallen in the stream up here upstream and they've fallen in the stream and they're flailing around and then we're down here at the bridge trying to help them get out. Well, primary prevention gets at the very beginning. What is causing them to fall into the river in the first place? So working towards dealing with the things that start that cycle of violence or the issues. So primary prevention is that we're way up here upstream. The integrated part is when you realize that violence is not necessarily single-fold. It includes, you know, if you're having family issues at home, if there is some sort of maltreatment or something going on at the home, when you come to drill, it's going to affect the way you're dealing with things here. So integrated is we're looking at not just suicide, but we're looking at the fact that there are other things like a sexual assault that may lead to suicidal ideations, where something happening with family violence is going to affect the way you may treat people at work. So integrated, we look at all of that so that we have this comprehensive picture. It's not just looking at suicide ideations. We're looking at the bigger picture, so the integrated aspect, so that we're better equipped to deal with those issues that are upstream.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense whenever you put it that that way.
Yes.
So who does the IPP work with? Like, is it specifically Guards member? Like, how does that work with working with us, I guess?
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about kind of the composition of the team and how they work with others. So I have a workplace violence specialist, a self-harm specialist, sexual violence specialist, and a family violence. Workplace violence, family violence. So four specialists, and though they're specialized in their area and they're looking at that data and information, like I said, we do a lot of research, we look at a lot of things. But based on that, and when we conduct climate surveys, climate assessments, we start to really look at what's going on, then I have tactical preventionists, and those individuals work with leadership. They'll work deep within the MSCs. While we're looking at what's going on and kind of assessing what's going on, what kind of data do we have, all of that information, we work with our partners. We collaborate a lot. We talk to Leslie Krause and her team. We talk to Mike Brown and his team. We talk to Kelsey. We utilize all of those personnel to make sure that we're seeing like the back end and we're researching the front end, that it's all, like I mentioned before, that whole comprehensive look. So we're a team. And not only that, we work with community partners, because remember I said our people are in the community. So we're looking at what kind of resources are available, what's going on in the community, what are the suicide rates for the state of South Carolina versus what's going on in our guard. Those kinds of collaborators, partners, all of those. But in turn, then our tactical preventionists work with all of that information. We develop activities, we highlight things that need to be improved, and then these preventionists work within the MSCs to say, hey, within your MSC or within your command, these are the kind of issues that we're noticing. So here are some things that we've already pre-planned, things we're working on. They tailor it. They look to kind of make sure that leader, that command team and leadership throughout the organization is all on the same page, understanding that there's a different climate in the aviation than it is in the signal world. So those preventionists will be working with those leaders. And as I mentioned, when we're developing all of this data collection and information and identifying things where we need to improve or enhance or create, that is our what we call our comprehensive integrated primary prevention plan, and that is signed off by the TAG. So the TAG has input. When we go to him and say, here's what we found, this is what we're thinking, and he says, I think that's great, I like this idea, change this, and he signs off on it. And that is one of the things that we're getting ready to have him sign off on, is actually a directive to the organization that says, here's our plan and let's make it happen. So our senior leaders are involved also in the process of hearing what's going on and having what their perspective is. So it is, when we say integrated, we're talking and working with a lot of people.
So it's not necessarily that people are coming to you trying to get help. You're more of trying to figure out how to prevent them to get to the point where they need the help, but then also, too, we still have all the resources that they would need if they still need them.
Exactly.
But you guys are working with all those resources to figure out mm-hmm. how to prevent it. So it's kind of just like this never-ending circle.
Well, we hope it ends.
Well, yeah.
But exactly, yes.
Okay. So you kind of talked about the team and all that and what you guys do, but, like, if somebody were wanting to, like, what are qualifications that they need to be able to work in these kind of areas and have these kind of specialties? Like, do you have to have a specific background, have college? Mm-hmm. Like, how does that work?
So there's varying levels. So, like I said, the tactical preventionists come in, and there is a requirement for them to have a certain number of behavioral health college level classes. So they don't necessarily have to have the degree, but they have to have the experience. And I'll tell you something special about our organization is Tierra Wells, who is one of our tactical preventionists, she actually has a degree in social work and has worked in the community with families. So she's got that experience. We have Chris Allen, who basically was at NGB when they set up this program. So he has the policy knowledge, plus he's very engaged with this self-harm community and his experience. And then Brianna Sam just came to us from Fort Jackson, and she also has a degree in social work, but she's worked in that military community. So the experiences and the education kind of all come together. Now, the specialists, they do require a degree. That's like the first thing, is they want them to have the degree in behavioral health. Now, there is still a larger portion of education, the behavioral health sciences courses plus experience. You know, when we hire someone, you can go just off the education, but sometimes you have to look at experience. But fortunately, our specialists so far, we've got Rachel Goulet, who came from the College of Charleston. So she's worked with 20-somethings, you know, young adults. She also is I think she's a licensed counselor. Calvin Glover came from the VA. He's been working with retirees. And he's a former Marine and has that experience, so being military members. Coming on board is Laura Quattlebaum, who will be, she's actually still in the Air Guard, but she's worked in as an equal opportunity advisor, so she has that experience. And then finally, Karma Simmons is actually coming to us from Okinawa. She's been working in family programs, like family advocacy programs, for most of her career, so she's got that family background. So degrees and such, but experience, and kind of rounds out the whole team. But of course, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about my right-hand man. Yes, Jim St. Clair, you know, also from the Air Guard side of the house. So he's very familiar with so a lot of times when we have programs and it's so Army-centric, we forget that people are people. And we're working both sides, not just Army. We're also out at the Air Guard side. And with Jim, he kind of manages the team. He kind of draws the connections. He facilitates. He's the lead analyst. So he's looking at this data and information and working with the teams. This next year, when we really start to push our tactical preventionists down, he will be facilitating pretty much the implementation down throughout the organization.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I asked that, because whenever you hear of, like, the sexual assault, all the behavioral health programs and the suicide prevention, all that, it's like, how do the people even get there? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, how do they be like, oh, I'm going to apply for this job, and then what actual qualifications do you need to do that kind of job? Because it's so, like, specific. So
right. I think this is one of the first times that in my career that I have seen a PD very explicit on education requirements, experience, your KSAs, knowledge, skills, and abilities. But I think a lot of it starts with you have people who really want to help people. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the fine line we have to be careful with. With the IPPW, we cannot, per policy and directives, we're not allowed to do the response aspect. We're to look at those programs and say, how can you do them better? And like I mentioned, all of my people have some experience working with in that response area. But we have to be very careful, because we're not to be on the response side. We're supposed to be advising and doing that. And I think it comes from, a lot of times we get people who come in and start asking because they're interested, because they want to help people. And I think that's just kind of the nature of anyone who's looking for a career in, whether it's advertising, marketing, you know, teaching, any of those areas. It's, I call it a vocation. What are you called to do? And some people just feel that that is the area they want to work in. And that's why there are a ton of people wanting these jobs. I've interviewed a lot of people.
Well, that's a good thing, because it's better to have more than enough than not have enough at all. Like, right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Is there anything currently that you guys are working on or have implemented that has you've noticed has made a difference so far?
Unfortunately, no.
Because, I mean, it's still pretty new. It's still new.
Yeah, we just completed our plan this spring. And as I mentioned, we've been trying to roll it out. That's why we're doing the directive from the TAG to say, okay, you guys will do this. But some of the things that we are seeing, the TAG re-signed and posted his alcohol policy. And that is one of the things that we wanted to get at is the alcohol policy. I'll just mention some of the program, the activities that we mentioned in our plan are things like a mentorship program. And we've come across a program that works individually with leaders to develop those leadership skills, such as empathy, emotional intelligence, how to have difficult conversations, how to be just basically a better leader. So that program we're looking to implement. There's a few things. We didn't want to go too far, although the people who evaluated our plan told us we were being pretty aggressive, but we were trying to affect multiple violence areas, what we call risk areas. So in order to do some of that, how do we find out? Well, you just kind of asked what we were doing is we're embarking on the next round of DEOCS, the Defense Equal Opportunity Climate Survey. They tried to rename it the Force-Wide Climate Survey because it's not necessarily just being used for EO. We're using that survey and the assessment to really get at the climate. As I mentioned before, is we've got to fix the climate so people will seek help. So we're rolling that out 1 August, doing a lot of publication announcements, going through the process to get people spun up because we really want to hear people's voice. Last year we didn't get the responses that we needed, and I get it. How many years have you taken a climate survey and said, yeah, nothing's going to happen, I'm going to say what I want to say? We're going to start doing things, and that's what last year's DEOCS did for us, is it highlighted our risk areas and our what we call our risk factors, and then we have our protective factors. What is it that we're strong in that we can use to offset or counterbalance our risks? What can we look at that will eliminate or at least lessen some of the risks that are going on in our units? And if we don't have a full response rate, it's hard to take that data and say, well, okay, it seems that these are the areas we're looking at. So we're really pumping it up this year to get as much participation as possible. So that'll run August 1st through the end of October, which should give people 3 drill periods to provide their input, and then we'll get to work. We're probably going to conduct some focus groups. We're going to do some interviews. We're going to gather some additional data and really have a robust amount of information in which to make decisions. And then we'll have to roll out with a new plan.
Start all over.
Yes. It's a never-ending cycle.
Exactly. All right. Well, is there anything else that maybe we didn't touch on or that I didn't ask that you kind of want to go over or mention before we close out? I know we talked about a lot, and I know that we want to talk about stuff in the future. But is there anything in general that you kind of want to touch on?
I feel like we've really run the gamut here with the conversation.
It's simple.
It's simple. It's too easy.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you stopping by. I know that I was talking to some of your other members in your section, and they're trying to set up some future podcast stuff. So we'll have some more information to push out. But I'm glad that you came in and talked with us to at least talk about what it is and what you guys are doing. And then we can kind of go further into it as you guys progress and grow. Because like we've said, you guys are still so new. So it'll be interesting to see how things change.
Yes. Well, thank you, Chelsea. I appreciate you taking the time. This
Absolutely.
Was great.
Yes. All right. Well, if you guys like this video, even though this is just audio for right now, make sure you give it a big thumbs up. If you haven't subscribed to our channel, make sure you hit the subscribe button, and we will catch you guys in the next episode.